Hello, and welcome to Lisa's Lair. This episode's going to be a little bit different. It's not a ghost story. It might fall under local lore. It's true crime, which, as you know, is not my forte, but I wanted to tell you a story. So let's go back to 1984. My aunt worked for a company that manufactured carbon paper for businesses. Carbon paper was a way of having an instant copy. It used to be used between checks, if anybody writes checks anymore, for bill of ladings that were typed up on an ancient machine called a typewriter. This is before you could just type something up on the computer, click print, and the number of copies you wanted. Anyway, carbon paper was essential back in the day. She co-managed the customer service department, and they were expanding, so her and her co-manager went to their boss and said they wanted to interview and pick their new hire. So they interviewed several candidates, and they offered it to a mild-mannered man with a good phone voice who seemed to meet the criteria for a customer service representative. But unbeknownst to them, he was a serial killer. And this man was Larry William Eiler, a.k.a. the Highway Killer, a.k.a. the Interstate Killer. And he was called that because his victims were found in several different Midwestern states. Wisconsin, Indiana, Illinois, which again, can all be accessed through the interstate. Between 1982 and 1984, he was known to have committed a minimum of 21 murders. That disqualifies as a serial killer. Sometimes the bodies were whole, sometimes they were cut up. And again, I'm not going to go into each of his victims. Number one, that would make this way too long. And number two, like I said, true crime isn't my forte. I just wanted to, again, share this with you. But I'll give you a little background on him. Larry was born on December 21st, 1952, in Crawfordsville, Indiana. Youngest of four children. His father was an abusive alcoholic. His mother would go on to marry three more times, with two of those stepfathers being alcoholics. He spent time in foster homes, home for unruly boys, and a Catholic boys' school. So he had a bit of a rough start. When he, hit puberty, he came to terms with his sexuality. He was homosexual. He kind of kept that under wraps for a while, didn't tell anybody, just his family. But eventually he, found a spot, his place in the gay community in Indiana, where he was accepted. He had a good group of friends. They also described him, as easygoing, laid back. And he did, move to Illinois. And he worked primarily as a house painter. So I don't know what else he did that he met the criteria for a customer service representative, but whatever. But he was primarily a house painter and staying with people out here in Illinois. And then on Saturdays, he would go back to Indiana and work as a liquor store clerk. And again, I'm not going to get into all his relationships. I'm not going to get into, the psychology of it, because that's not what I do. But his first attempt was in 1978, where he picked up a hitchhiker, drove him to a field, forced him out of the truck, had him take his clothes off, and he stabbed him. And punctured his lung. The victim played dead, so Eiler would leave, and luckily Eiler, this was before he decided to chop anybody up, left, and his victim, went to a nearby house. They called the police. When Eiler was picked up, he said, "Well, it was an accident." Yeah, right. Okay. But they arrested him, and he pled guilty. $10,000 bond. His friends raised the bond. Then Eiler's lawyer went to the victim and offered him a check for $2,500 that was written by one of Eiler's friends if the victim would drop the charges. I guess in 1978, if you're a homeless teenage hitchhiker, $2,500 was a lot of money. So instead of pressing charges on somebody that tried to kill you, he took the money, he dropped the charges. Eiler then changed his plea to not guilty. He was released. $43 in court costs. Yeah, that was a mistake. So anyway, let's fast forward to 1984. He's supposed to start at my aunt's company at 9 a.m. Now, most people on their first day would be early. It's after 9. Where's Larry? Her boss is not happy. He's out there tapping his foot, hands on his hip, tapping his watch. So they're like, maybe he got lost. This was in the city. Maybe he got lost. Maybe, heaven forbid, he was in an accident. You gotta remember, 1984, people didn't have cell phones. So it's not like he could pull a cell phone out or ask a paramedic to get his cell phone and they would look for in case of emergency number. So it was closer to 9:30. I know a lot of panic for a half hour that was going on in this office, but closer to 9:30, so I pulled his application. The only number on there is a house number, because that's all most people had. Believe it or not, it was a landline. And a detective answers the phone. So she asks for Larry. Detective explains to her he can't come to the phone. So he asked who she was. She told him, I'm just wondering if he's coming in. The detective said, you know, I would say he's never coming in. And all he could tell her at the time was that he was in protective custody, because he probably wasn't at liberty to say more than that. And now, also remember, 1984, you didn't get instant news. So the news broke the next morning that the serial killer was arrested. And they were shocked at the number of victims. And, the police did go to her company, question them, but, they didn't have much information to give them. Now, a follow-up on Larry. He was convicted. He was sentenced to death. But on March 6th, 1994, he died in the infirmary at the Pontiac Correctional Center. And his death was due to an AIDS-related complication. And they said he'd been very, very sick for about 10 days before his death. So he did die in prison, but he wasn't executed. He did try and get his sentence commuted to life by offering to give more information on other victims, but that didn't fly. They wanted him sentenced to death. Now, his lawyer also read a confession 2 days after his death, where he admitted, he named four more individuals that he had murdered. I guess he just wanted out there, I don't know if he thought he was getting heaven points or clearing his conscience. And again, some of his victims were found whole, some of them were found chopped up. But, I guess in the end, he did serve the ultimate sentence. I mean, he wasn't, like I said, he wasn't executed, but he did die in prison. And needless to say, my aunt did not have a flourishing career in human resources. So, that's all I've got for this episode. I hope you enjoyed it, and we'll be back soon. Stay safe.